Hello, and welcome to episode 180 of Public Interest Podcast with your host, Jordan Cooper, where we interview politicians, activists, advocates, and others who seek to improve the state of the world. We're here today with Cyril Dion, French writer, film director, poet, and ecological activist. He is the writer and co-producer of the documentary film Tomorrow, or Demain le Film, with Melanie Laurent, released in France in Christmas 2015, which won the César Award for Best Documentary, which is the Oscar equivalent in France. This movie has been released in 30 countries and had its American debut on April 15th. He is the former president of the jury in the documentary movie category of the Biarritz Latin American Film Festival and is the winner of the Festival Cocoa Los Angeles Award for Best Documentary. He's also the winner of the Festival Rom Dom de Toulonnais in 2016 for Best Documentary and the Festival de Film de Salat 2015 Salamandre d'Or. He is a former organizer of the First and Second World Congress of Imams and Rabbis for Peace, the co-founder of Mouvement Colibri, also known as Hummingbird Non-Government Organization, the founder of Kaizen Magazine, and a former actor of natural medicine practitioner and an author of three books. Cyril, thank you so much for joining us. How are you doing today?
I'm good.
Excellent. So the first question I'd like to pose to you is, what are you currently doing or what have you ever done to advance the public interest and why?
Actually, I've been touring for the last 15 months. I've been to 17 countries to travel with my documentary Tomorrow, mm-hmm. to try to raise awareness about ecological issues, but also the fact that we are maybe facing one of the biggest challenge humanity ever faced. Actually, we met scientists who told us that we have 20 years to change the way we live, otherwise part of humanity could disappear by the end of the century. And we tried to do it in a really different way, just to try to show solutions, positive initiatives, and to show how the world could look like if you would put together some of the best solutions we already know, instead of focusing on the catastrophe.
So I know that in the movie was made in response to a report in the journal Nature about the possible extinction of part of mankind this century. So first of all, how did that come to your attention, and what does it mean, a possible extinction of part of mankind, and then why was film the best response to that for you?
I actually read an article in Le Monde, which is one of the biggest newspapers in France, talking about the study. And then I read it in the journal Nature. And basically the paper is saying that if we combine all the problems we face now, such as pollution, climate change, soil erosion, the huge disparition of species we're facing now, one of the biggest disappearing of species worldwide since the dinosaur disappeared million years ago. I don't remember. And they're basically fearing that we face some kind of a tipping point, and at some point all these problems combined could lead to some ecological disaster.
Right.
Who could, you know, make a lot of problems happen. For example, we could have food shortage, we could have many economical crises, we could have wars, mm-hmm. and that could lead to some, you know, disaster, could make part of humanity disappear. So what we were trying to do is not only to tell about this catastrophe, because it's 5 minutes in the movie with the two scientists from Stanford University who led the study. But from that, we traveled the world in 10 countries to try to find some good answers to that. Because we have the feeling now that we need to make people creative about it, to empower people instead of just scare them.
So there was a major movie made, actually won an Oscar, I believe, The Inconvenient Truth with Al Gore, that addressed the dangers of climate change. But I guess, are you saying that it seemed that that movie really raised global awareness for the dangers posed by climate change, but what you were trying to do with Tomorrow is to present solutions that individual listeners and viewers of your film could actually take action in order to help avoid this crisis. Is that correct?
Absolutely. And not only individuals, we try to show solutions that cities, governments, business holders can take right now to avoid this catastrophe.
Now, there were, you organized the film almost into about five chapters. For listeners who haven't yet seen the film, it's organized into agriculture, economy, education, democracy, and energy. So clearly not all of these are directly related to climate change, though all might have an impact on climate change. How is it that you began categorizing the film into these chapters? How did you create this approach? Because there are nearly infinite number of things that you could point to that says, ah, this too points to climate change, or this poses a threat to the to world economy and world stability. How did you find these particular chapters to organize your film by?
Actually, we wanted to focus on the main subjects that are, you know, influencing our society. And we started with agriculture because it's our basic need. We need to eat every day. And many studies show that when civilization collapses, mm-hmm. it's usually because of a food shortage. So the first thing is to find a way to feed everybody on the planet by 2050 or by the end of the century. And we found many, many solutions about agriculture, how we can change agriculture, mm-hmm. Use less chemicals, less fertilizer, develop the biodiversity again. But at some point, we just realized that nowadays, the agricultural system is really dependent on oil. Mm-hmm. So if we want to change agriculture, we need to think about energy. And then we hit the road again, and we found some really great solution, mainly about renewable energies. But at some point, we just realized that to make this transition, we need money. Mm-hmm. And many cities, many states are now very much in debt, and mm-hmm. they don't have the money to do this transition. So we had an economic problem that we needed to address. Mm-hmm. Here again, we found great solutions, and at some point, we realized that one of the problems is that finance took over politics and democracy. So we need to find a new way to organize our democracy, to change our economic system. And then again, we found some great solutions. But at some point, we also, you know, saw that for a good democracy to function, we need to educate people. We need to make them responsible and aware of many, many subjects. So we ended up with education and school in Finland.
So you speak in the beginning, right? So we're beginning with agriculture and potential food shortages. You may well remember, or at least have studied, in the 1970s, there was a Green Revolution. And leading up to that point, there were concerns in the 60s and 70s that in the coming decades, humanity would actually not be able to feed themselves. And there were problems about population control. There were efforts for mass sterilization in the 1960s. In India, there's the one-child policy. In China, concern that there would be revolutions and violence. And of course, all that was averted. None of that ever actually took place because there were technological advances, which you mentioned were often very much reliant on petroleum products to increase production of different crops. And that, of course, is often within the vein of monoculture. So I'd like you to, one, respond to this idea. If there is a cynic or a skeptic listening to this show, how would you respond in saying that in the 1970s, that idea of a dystopian future that was averted is not similar to your idea of a dystopian future with climate change? And in part two, if you could elaborate on monoculture as an enormous theme throughout your film, both in the economy with one crop, with agriculture, with the economy with few businesses, and onwards, please.
I'm just listening to scientists and what they are saying all around the world. We have thousands of scientists warning us about the consequences about climate change, about the fact that we are experiencing a mass extinction of species, and this is already happening now. It's not some kind of a fantasy that is going to happen in the future. So we know that we need to do something about it. And for example, in the movie, we were interviewing one of the leading UN responsible for agriculture, and they have been made a study on 68 countries around the world, And they now believe that we cannot keep on going like that with industrial agriculture because it's destroying ecosystem too fast. We need to cut the forest. We need to use pesticides who are harming biodiversity. Mm-hmm. We are polluting the water. We are causing massive climate change through our agriculture. So we need to find other way to be really productive, but to be in partnership with ecosystems, actually. And that leads us to that question of monoculture. What we discovered talking with scientists from all around the world is that if you want a system to work and to be resilient, it needs diversity. You cannot go on there is no monoculture in the natural world. Mm-hmm. That's another way to put it. And monoculture is really an industrial way of thinking the world that we invented, and it worked pretty well in the past to produce a lot, to make the cost very low and to do it fast. But now we just kind of realize that it has huge impact on nature and that we need more to get inspired by the way nature function. For example, in the movie, we are shooting some permaculture farm who are really inspired by the forests and the way forests for centuries have been really fertile. And so how can we reproduce the fertility of the forest when we do agriculture and when we grow vegetables? And that's permaculture.
So I know that you are presenting this film as a call to action, more than just simply a method of artistic expression. You mm-hmm. have shown the film to supranational organizations, to national entities. I know you brought it to the United Nations. I think mm-hmm. that some actual politicians, you brought it before legislative assemblies, and they have viewed the film. And then, of course, you've showed it to individuals and society, and you encourage individuals to take action as well. You present some solutions. Let's go more organic. Let's go more local renewable energy. Let's have stronger local economies, like the invention of local currencies in those villages in Great Britain. Could you speak for a moment?
Bristol is not a village.
Okay, of a town. Another village. So I guess...
not a village anymore.
Could you speak about what solutions you're really requesting? What are you asking governments to do? What are you asking United Nations to do? What are you asking individuals to do? What would happen that would make you say, you know what, this film was worthwhile making it and accomplished exactly what we want? Because clearly we can't reverse what's happened over the last 20 years. You can't make that not happen. We're moving forward in time. So what is it that you're asking people and organizations to do?
Basically, we need to stop climate change as soon as we can. Mm-hmm. So one of the biggest thing we need to do is to go from fossil fuel energy to renewable energy as fast as we can, to stop sending in the atmosphere as much CO2 and carbon. Another thing is that we need to stop destroying the natural world and destroying the places where all the species are living, because we depend on them. So one of the greatest ways to do that is to move from an industrial and chemical agriculture to an organic and more productively, more intensive agriculture, which is using no chemicals, no oil, and as less machines as we can. We also need to strengthen our local economies because we have too much disparity in the world. And some years ago, a story was published by one of the lab of the NASA, and it was saying that most of the time when civilization collapses, it is because of two factors. The first one is that we consume natural resources too fast and they cannot renew themselves. And the other one is that disparity are too big. And we know now that 8 people on the planet have as much money as 3.5 billion. And that's too much. That is creating social tension. So we need to find a way to English. To have people to share the wealth better. And we have no really great study, American study, published in the Harvard Business Review, showing that if you want to share the wealth, you need to have a large diversity of local-owned businesses and less huge companies who are concentrating too much power and too much money.
So when you speak about the redistribution of wealth, some American listeners may think of socialism, may think of the Cold War and communism, right? Something that we definitely don't want to go towards. But of course, in reality, any government has a tax-based structure, which essentially takes money from everybody or a specific sex of society and then redistributes that wealth. Are you advocating for greater rates of income taxation? How is it that you're, what are you asking of politicians in particular in order, are you looking to increase tax rates? How would you wish to redistribute the wealth?
No, actually, I don't think it's a good way to do it. What I would like politicians to do is to change the way they tax things. We should tax more activities who are destroying the planet, for example, and tax less common people and the work. That's one thing. Then we would need to, as I said, have many more local-owned businesses all around to make the wealth circulate a lot more. Mm-hmm. To have big businesses all around sucking money from territories, it's just concentrating money a lot. Another solution we could have is to change the way we create money, because now we mainly create money through debt when people make borrowings. And that's also a huge factor of concentration of wealth, which is easy to understand because, for example, interest, it's some people who already have more money than they need who lend money to people who don't have enough. So the people who don't have enough just will give more money to the people who have already too much. So that's not working. We saw many great examples, for example, in Switzerland, where they create money without interest and without debt.
So, Cyril, I'd like to pivot a little bit to you personally and how you've actually begun to live out the creed that you are espousing. You have taken action on a personal level in co-founding the movement Colibri and in reducing your carbon footprint and actually filming this movie over the course of 5 years. Can you take a moment and speak about how you've taken individual action to actually see this change that you are advocating for?
Okay. My carbon footprint actually in the last 2 years is not that good because I'm traveling the world with the movie by plane. So that's not pretty good. But in my day-to-day life, I became a vegetarian and eating less meat and especially less red meat is one of the greatest way to reduce your carbon footprint. It was in the Leonardo DiCaprio movie lately. I'm mainly going by foot and by bike and by train, and I take my car as less as I can. Mm-hmm. I recycle, I compost.
And you founded the movement.
Mainly eating organic and local food. I buy organic cosmetic detergents, clothes.
And you founded the movement Colibri. What is that all about? What is the NGO, the Hummingbird? What were you trying to accomplish there?
Actually, Hummingbird it's coming from a legend from South America, saying that once the hummingbird and all the animals were in the middle of a forest, and the forest was on fire, and they didn't know what to do. They were just feeling scared and helpless, and they just gathered in next to a river and they were looking at the fire, you know, destroying the forest. All of them, except the small hummingbird, who went to the river, took a drop, put it on the fire, and so on and so forth. And after a while, all the animals were saying, okay, you can stop now, hummingbird. It's just, you know, it's helpless. You're never going to do anything with this fire, with your tiny drop. And he said, yes, I know, but I do my share. And that's pretty much the objective of the movement, to gather all the people who want to do their share to build a more ecological and human society.
Well, and what has been the impact of the Colibri movement?
Actually, we are trying to empower people wherever they are. So we do mainly three things. We show solutions, we gather people, and we help them to accomplish their projects. So we have more than 300,000 people now in France working with us, creating local currencies, organic farms, changing their local government's policies, trying to change the urban circulation system to have more bikes and less cars, and that's pretty much it.
So, Cyril, as we approach the end of this podcast, I'd like to ask you a final question. You mentioned one of your reasons, one of your goals in creating this film Tomorrow is a shift from a material-oriented world to one in which individuals have more meaningful lives and are in greater harmony with nature, with very broad implications, trying to, in essence, prevent, as you say, the collapse of civilization. Can you take a moment and speak to viewers of your film, Demain le film, Tomorrow, about what it is, how taking action will not only avert greater civilizational collapse, which everyone in theory would like to do, but more importantly, have a more personally meaningful life? Why is it that you are doing what you've done? Why are you trying to advance the public interest through film, through your magazines, through the Hummingbird movement? And at the end of your career, what do you hope your legacy will be through all of your efforts?
Actually, you know, I have two children. They're 12 and 9, so I don't want them to grow up in a world that is going to be some chaos. So I want to do everything I can just to avoid this catastrophe and to let them, you know, live in a great world. That's what every parent should do, I think. And to me, that's also something that is going to make us more happy. I mean, we are not on this planet just to, you know, to work and buy, or to work in order to be able to buy. That's just a stupid way to be on, a stupid reason for being on this earth. So I think this is also some kind of a spiritual crisis. We need to find a meaning with our life, and we need to do things that we are okay with. When we buy, when we work, when we travel. And if we kind of realize that what we are doing and the way we are living has a tremendous negative impact on people and on nature, we should do something about it. That's just the only reason I'm doing all I did all these years.
And that has been Cyril Dion, the French writer, film director, poet, and ecological activist, writer and co-producer of the documentary film Tomorrow, which is the award winner for Best Documentary of the César Award, the Oscar equivalent. He's a former president of the jury in a documentary movie category of the Biarritz Latin American Film Festival, winner of numerous film awards for Best Documentary, former organizer of the World Congress of Imams and Rabbis for Peace, co-founder of the Hummingbird Movement, the Kaizen Magazine, many different interests, who speaks essentially about a collapse of civilization being defined as where natural resources are being destroyed faster than they can be regenerated, and the rise of social inequality. And he refers to climate change and mass extinction of species, pollution, exploitation of people and nature, deforestation as great problems facing our civilization. And he's very much driven to advance the public interest by presenting solutions through this film. Whether you go organic and local, vegetarian, eating less meat, contributing to strong local circular economies, he speaks about ameliorating the food shortage and our reliance on carbon-based fuels that is leading to global climate change. And he even speaks about a spiritual crisis in which he's helping individuals call attention to what might be more meaningful in their lives than simply being a cog in a capitalist, consumer-driven society and economy. So for Cyril, it seems as though he advances the public interest as best he can by, in fact, promoting change in agriculture, economy, by educating through film, attempting to catalyze change in democracy, promote transition in the use of energy sources for society. And through all these solution-oriented stories that he tells through his film, he hopes to have a more lasting positive impact not only for all of society, but he speaks concretely about creating a better world for his children and for the future generations. So, Cyril, I'd like to thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Jordan.
This has been episode 180 of Public Interest Podcast with your host, Jordan Cooper, where we interview politicians, activists, advocates, and others who seek to improve the state of the world. I remind you to subscribe on publicinterestpodcast.com, listen on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, CastBox, Blueberry, Player FM, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and YouTube. Should you wish to comment on this conversation, you can call Public Interest Podcast at 240-630-0380. That message could be put online. If you support the mission of this podcast, you're welcome to make a contribution at publicinterestpodcast.com. Thank you so much for listening.